Right now, we are joined by a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, co-host of Open Floor, SI's NBA show, also a member and an adjunct faculty member at Northwestern. He's got a brand new book out, Blood on the Hardwood, The Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks. It is available for pre-order. In fact, Chris Herring is my guest. Chris, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Good to visit with you. Let me start right here. The NBA season's underway, and we could have a whole conversation about the games from last night alone, Chris. But Ben Simmons has done a pretty amazing job of being the story of the league over the past week. I'm curious, what was your reaction when you heard he got thrown out of practice for refusing to participate in a defensive drill and then generally his act overall? What do you think when you see this?
I was telling people before, I was surprised that it wasn't an offensive drill that he decided to opt out of. That was my first thought. The second thought, though, was that, man, this, you know, for how ugly this looks, and obviously it's ugly and it's beyond repair at this point, it shows he clearly never wanted to come back. It was just about how much money he was losing through the fines and everything like that. And so, you know, maybe this is one way to get out of it, but my goodness, you know, as far as his value around the league, I mean, it could become a really, really, it already is an ugly game of chicken, but if you're the Sixers and you were just going to hold out for what you wanted, you're probably more likely to do that now just because who wants somebody that's kind of behaving that way? And Simmons must know that. Maybe he's just trying to torpedo everything on the way out, but it may be a while. And so, you know, it may be one of those situations where everybody needs to grab a Snickers.
See, Chris, I was talking about this. It seems to me like I could see why Anthony Davis wanted out of his situation. I could see why James Harden wanted out of his situation. You know, right or wrong, I could see where they want to be in different situations. Do you have a sense as to why Simmons wants out of Philly?
Yeah, I was talking to someone about that, too. I mean, this was a number one seed that got upset in the second round, has an MVP candidate where you're not asked to be the lead scorer for this team. You have a role where you can settle in and be, you know, maybe a defensive player of the year at some point. And you don't even have to handle the ball all the time. You're not asked to shoot much. And you have a max deal for several more years. So it's pretty peachy. I mean, does he have feelings about what Doc Rivers said? And frankly, you know, Doc did say something that you're not used to hearing coaches speak that candidly in the aftermath of a really horrible loss, where he's straight up said, I don't know if we win this and win a championship with him as our point guard. That is hard to hear. Embiid also had comments that were pretty suggestive of how hurtful that play was and kind of how it hurt their chances of winning that series. But again, I mean, you're making a lot of money in a big market, and people can talk about how horrible the Philly fans are. They've got their moments, certainly. But I think, if anything, they were rooting for Ben Simmons and encouraging him just to shoot. I mean, the guy seems really afraid to fail. So I'm not sure where you go, where at some point, if he goes to a smaller place where the expectations are lower, but he ends up being even more of a face of what they're doing, I don't know that ultimately makes it easier for him. And I don't know what the answer is or which side is up for him at this point.
Chris Herring is joining us. He's a senior writer at Sports Illustrated. All right, so before Simmons grabbed that spotlight, Kyrie Irving and the Nets were occupying that spot for a while. What do you make of this Nets team without Kyrie?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think that they're still capable of winning the East and maybe winning the whole thing without him, because the rest of that roster is a lot better than it was last year as far as the depth on it. You got to see some of that last night. I mean, it was a team that looked like they clearly need some time to play together, including the bench guys that are going to be a big part of it. Whether they're as able to withstand a serious injury to Kevin Durant or James Harden that would keep them out for 20 games, maybe not, you know, as if you had three people and the ability to withstand that. But I don't think any of this really matters for the regular season. It's kind of more, can they hit a rhythm and can they really develop the things they need to by the end of the season? And by the way, as we talk about Simmons and where he ends up, if Kyrie's not going to play and he's just not going to get vaccinated, you know, is he going to sit out a whole season? Would he do that? And if he's not and he wants to play but just isn't going to get the shot and play in Brooklyn, do they get something for him? Even if it's not a third star, if it's even more depth, if it is someone that is kind of, a, you know, in between just a role player and someone that is a superstar, They could make use of that as well, and it kind of bolsters them still. So I'm not concerned about them. I did kind of think that Milwaukee would be better early on in the season, if not later in the season, just because they have all the cohesion that Brooklyn really does not yet.
Chris Herring is joining us. All right, speaking of Milwaukee, I thought you made a really interesting point on the Crossover podcast when you said that you didn't think that Giannis could win the MVP again this season. So let me ask you, has he, the point being though, has he reached a point of Jordan, LeBron excellence where there's almost Giannis MVP fatigue? Is that what we're talking about?
I think possibly. I will say this. A lot of times, like, I think LeBron potentially would have won more and would have won the one right after he went to Miami had people not been so up in arms about the way he left for Miami. And so I think sometimes, you know, my point may be accurate, may be wrong as far as the fatigue. I mean, he's coming off a title. He's 26, and so he still has room to get better with the jumper and with other things as well. But I also think he's really well-liked in a way that a lot of people are not by the time that they get to this stage. As far as just like being universally loved, it's really hard to find people to just say negative things about Giannis in terms of, you know, he hasn't had a decision moment, and I don't know that he ever will. And so that part of it is worth keeping in mind too. But I think the point that some of my colleagues made on that podcast that you were speaking about is that it's just harder for me. A lot of times what I look at when I'm looking at an MVP vote or something like that is this kind of standard for what they've done already, or are they pushing new boundaries? And with Jokic, that was what he was doing. With Giannis in his second year that he won the MVP, he had done that. With Steph in his second year, where he was unanimous, it was the same sort of thing where he went above and beyond even what he'd done the first time he won it. I think it gets harder for Giannis to keep doing that unless he develops a jumper. But it's possible, and it's very possible that his team ends up with the best record, which also you would think gives him a little bit of a leg up in terms of trying to do it. But I do think once you start getting in that rarefied air of three awards, four awards that you've won, it gets a little bit harder just because I think at that point you're basically saying this guy is one of the greatest to ever play, and he is, but is he like Jordan-level greatest to ever play, or is he somewhere in between there? And I think some people will probably have that question and maybe hold off on voting for him.
I think that's a very interesting conversation. Chris Herring joining us. All right, one more thing really quickly. When you look at the Lakers, they opened up their season last night with that loss to Golden State. They were up 2-1 on Phoenix in the postseason before it all fell apart. In your opinion, did they really need to blow it all up and radically reshape the roster the way that they did?
I mean, it's months later, and I'm still stunned that they did that. Not just that they blew it up, but that you blew it up to bring Russell Westbrook in. And I know it's just game one. You know, and there are people that are more nerd oriented like me that are going to look at the box score and also watch the game and notice the nuances of the game as well. But notice right away that, you know, Russ is not necessarily the things that you need for that team, as a third star. You normally think of third stars, Klay Thompson with Durant and Steph and, you know, people like that, Ray Allen with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, guys that kill you if you can't get out to them as a defender to stop them from shooting because you leave them wide open. Russ is not a good shooter. You would rather him be wide open. And he's not someone that's going to cut, and he's not someone that's going to screen, and he's a kind of not a defender that you want to have out there when Steph is out there because he's not going to stay with Steph. And so he was a minus 23 last night in a game that was relatively close. Nobody else had anything near that as far as the plus-minus. So that's the sort of thing I worry about. It's early. I'm sure they'll figure it out, but I would have kept the roster more similar and just banked on those guys being healthier this year then blow it up for that. But if they can prove me wrong, who knows? It's early.
So, Chris, really quickly, as a follow-up, what do you think, all that said, that makes sense to me, what you said, what do you think that LeBron was thinking? Like, what kind of conversations was LeBron having in the mansion when he had Russ over and said, this would work, this would work, this is why you should join us? What was his pitch?
You know, I think it's similar to what we were saying a moment ago about Brooklyn. Is if you have AD go down, or even if LeBron goes down again, at least you have a third guy that can kind of step in and take some of the brunt off everybody else. And so there's that part of it. But also, you know, God bless LeBron, but I also think star players kind of have blind spots when it comes to the sorts of things that we're talking about what really makes a championship team. He's great. He's a great player. But does he contribute to winning in the same way that, like, Chris Paul does? We had those guys traded straight up, and you kind of saw that right away with Washington in that situation and Oklahoma City and Houston and that whole thing. And Oklahoma City was in the playoffs at a time where no one expected that. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm not sure how much Russ helped in some situations. with regards to Houston when he wasn't really going to the basket and being aggressive. So we've seen that play out before. It doesn't mean they can't win. I just think there are other guys that would do that more efficiently, and I think third guys that would do that more efficiently. I think Russ, he would probably help the most off the bench. That's kind of a hot take, but I don't think that he has he's got too big of an ego to do that, and I think that Frank Vogel probably would not consider it, certainly not this early, but ever, and I don't think LeBron would either. But I think that he would be better suited there than, you know, taking the ball out of LeBron's hand. That's what I don't quite understand. You want LeBron to have the ball, and Russ needs the ball too. He's not going to help you as much as a jump shooter.
He is a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, co-host of Open Floor, SI's NBA show. And he's got a book that is now available for pre-order, Blood on the Hardwood, The Flagrant History of the 1990 New York Knicks. Chris Herring, my guest. Chris, really appreciate it. Great job as always. Always look forward to having you on the show, Chris. Thanks so much.
Always love being on. Thanks so much, Jim.
Have a great day, my man. Chris Herring. All right, so again, I think we all agree it's only one game. Now, it is only one game and a really poor preseason, but still just one regular season game. Give them some time. Maybe it works out. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe the fit is not right. Maybe there was no need to blow it up completely. All right, when we come back, John Morosi joins us.